corporate attorney Rich Honan pays us a visit once a month with some thoughts on headlines from the business world. Today is here to talk about the industry of poverty. We will talk about that in just a moment. To help sort it out, we welcome Rich Honan with Phillips Lytle LLP, where he is the partner in charge of the Albany office. Rich, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us once again.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So how do you define the industry of poverty? Let's begin there.
Well, I define an industry as anything that we spend a lot of money on, give a lot of attention to, that employs a lot of people, and that and around which a lot of government policy is made. And poverty fits all of those criteria.
But an industry would make you believe, and I think this is where the fun's going to be. Are you ready?
Yes.
The word of industry would make you believe that it is our intent not to solve the problem, but to keep it going.
Perpetuate it.
And, yes.
And, you know, looking at it empirically, last year there was a lot about the 50th anniversary of the war on poverty that Johnson had declared. A lot of people were throwing around a lot of statistics. I think at the time somebody estimated that we had spent between $16 and $22 trillion on the war against poverty. The question is, Johnson's idea was basically to stamp out poverty. And the question is, are we doing that, or are we really just perpetuating it? I think we've done a good job at subsidizing it. I think we've done a good job at making it, if you could say this, less onerous.
Yeah.
I don't want to say more palatable, but certainly, you know, the definition of poverty, most people who are now live within that band, classified as, you know, at poverty levels, most of those people have homes. Most of those people have enough to eat. Most of those people, and I'm talking statistically, have cars. They have, internet access. At least almost 50% of them do. And so it's a different view of poverty. But I don't know that we've done a lot to actually stamp it out. I think we've, like any industry, we've subsidized it, and we've prolonged the amount of money that we spend and the amount of policy that we make around it.
When you look at what has been done 50 years, since 50 years ago, and what Johnson was responsible for. Is it safe to say that when you look at Medicaid, Social Security, civil rights, voting rights, that these are achievements, great achievements, that have in some very, very strong and fundamental way have improved us as a people? And yes, there are concerns about the way we make the donuts, but the getting us there is a very important thing.
Well, you're conflating two issues there.
Call me Brian Williams. Sure, bring it on. Go ahead.
You guys must have talked about that this morning.
We
right?
did.
Okay.
We've been talking about this every morning because I love this story.
Right.
But go ahead.
Right. You always tell the truth, except sometimes about horses.
Maybe I'll say this is, well, hello.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Blinder calling the...
Right. Anyway.
Silk black, yes.
First, your voting rights, certainly, voting rights and the Equal Rights, the Civil Rights Act of 64. I mean, those are certainly great achievements. I don't know that either of them had anything to do with poverty, and I don't know that either of them... kind of surprisingly, did anything to mitigate poverty.
It would have allowed people in poverty to vote and to have a say in the government that would represent them, a representational form of government, and allow them to have a stake in how they were being treated as individuals.
And if that were true, then I think empirically we would have seen the interesting thing about the war on poverty is that if you follow either the Census Bureau or most of the reports, whether it's from the right on the Heritage Foundation or somewhere else, you find that the poverty rate declined for a few years right after it was already declining, right? So,
right.
You know, say 35% in the 40s, and by 1964, it was already in the, say, 18 to 20%, and maybe the 25 or 26%. It quickly went down to about 15-16%. But then after the first few years, it really stayed the same. Now the biggest thing that brings people above the poverty level now is basically the government subsidies. So you have, you know, you could, there's 5 million people who would be at the poverty level, but for the SNAP, the food stamp program, the supplemental nutrition. My point to all this is, if all of those initiatives, voting rights, for example, if they really were something that were curving people up, on the economic ladder, we'd be seeing a steady uptick. And we haven't seen that.
All right. So erase that for a moment. And let's because I have the war.
Not to denigrate voting rights, of course.
No, I mean, yeah. It's a war on anything. I have, the war on poverty, war on drugs. Okay, we get it. But we're trying to eradicate something and address a very, very serious issue. So let's look at on the ground right now. If not this, what? If not what we are doing, what do we do instead to improve the issue and to help people who genuinely need it?
Right. And first, it's not. This is one of those few issues, I think, where it's not an either or. Look, there are always going to be people that for whatever life circumstance are going to need basically additional money. Right. And the United States, you could argue, right wing, left wing. I think the United States has always or certainly recently, in the last 40, 50 years, has always been in position to do that for its people. And I think that's going to continue. But I think, Joe, one of the things and by the way, looking at the numbers, we're still looking at over 40 million people living in poverty now. Now, I know there's a lot more people in the country, and something like close to 20% of the people living in poverty are under 18. My question is it really working? Yes, I know we're subsidizing it, and through the dint of those subsidies, we're raising people above what we would call the poverty level. But we're not really changing the systemic poverty, the systemic kind of generational poverty. So to answer your question, first, I think that we need to really address poverty specifically. I'm going to say something that sounds intuitive, okay? But it hasn't always played out that way.
Yes.
We tend to want to fix a lot of things because we think they're going to fix poverty. So we want to fix healthcare because we think that'll help improve poverty and improve health.
It'll bring people who do not have access to healthcare. It will bring them healthcare.
Correct. And we're always trying to improve education. We always say that's going to be the ticket out of poverty. Really, if we look at it, the intuitive thing I'm going to say is if we fix poverty, I understand that that's a difficult fix, but if we fix poverty, we actually fix everything else. If you fix poverty, you really fix a lot of the problems with education. You fix the problems with healthcare. Talk to an educator and they say, look, we're doing the best we can with education, but a lot of the children, especially those from lower income situations, are the ones who come here the least prepared to learn. You fix poverty and you actually fix all of the other problems that we've been going at it a little bit backwards. We say we're trying to fix all these, what we call the root causes. Fix the cause. Fix that.
So how do you fix poverty?
So I think how you do it, there's a couple of ways. One of them is first, just rhetorically. I think if you listen to the, if you did a content analysis of the rhetoric over the last however many years, the last administration or two, certainly this administration, one of the things you'd see is you don't hear a lot of rhetoric about going out and working hard, about success. In fact, you hear a lot of rhetoric that, making money is bad and success is bad.
I don't believe that.
Oh, you don't think so?
No, I don't.
I mean, how many bumper stickers do you see that say tax the rich? How much?
That's different.
How?
Because you're not saying, you're telling people to go out. I think, and if anything, we have a system that we have set up, which we say to young people, if you are going to succeed, you have to follow this route. You have to go into college. You have to accept a lot of debt. You have to go out. And we are putting them that there are these measures of success that you have to achieve. There are these steps that you have to take to achieve that level and to go out into the world. And to do something, and often I feel that we are pushing them in a direction that is not attainable often with the resources that are available.
I would agree. I don't know that we're absolutely saying that. I think that we could certainly make it more desirable to say that, you know, going out and working is a good thing, and we can make it easier for people to work. I think one of the things, if you ask specifically, you know, there's still, you know, means testing for yeah. lots of entitlements, and I think one of the mistakes we make is kind of as people make more money, we basically they're less the entitlements are less available to them. I think that we should probably have a much longer kind of ramp for that. In other words, basically not disincenting people from working by reducing their entitlements or their even their unemployment or anything like that. I think that we could show people a little bit more that we're going to continue to support them as they're working. I don't think that we're necessarily, you know, I don't think that we're necessarily attacking the root cause, you know, the way you would say that we are.
I don't know that we're attacking the root cause either. I mean, I personally believe that, and this is completely anecdotal, and people okay. will yell at me about this, but because it's completely anecdotal, and it's I'm shooting from the hip a little bit, which is that I think a lot of our problems, many of our problems, and I certainly don't want to ascribe a percentage to it, has to do with mental health as well, which is an issue that we don't even discuss and we don't even have a system for. And I think we throw money at it and say, okay, because this is what I agree with you when you say that you have to combat poverty. I think you have to, yes, I think you have to take care of that problem. And what is causing that problem? All right, well, I think in many cases it has to do, as we were talking about in our last segment, I think it has to do with addiction. I think it has to do with mental health. And these are two issues that are certainly intertwined, but are also not dealt with at all.
I would agree with you. And if we looked and, you know, we then implicate another industry, right? The mental health industry, the healthcare industry, you know, but we're talking about, when you know, we started the discussion talking about industries, and I think what we're saying is that sometimes when you go to fix a problem, even in all good, you know, in all good faith trying to do that, you end up spending so much money and creating so many interest groups and so many lobbying opportunities and making so much policy around it that now you've kind of created an industry that only continues to survive so long as the problem exists. And I think people, policymakers, not everyday people, but policymakers become somewhat disincented in trying to fix poverty or fix, you know, a problem. And instead, they're looking more towards, and not in an evil way, more towards continuing the programs that cater to it.
Here's my concern, because I think we talk about this. Let me see if you buy this premise, first of all, and then we'll go from there. Which is, you know, we often will say, well, we don't like Congress, we don't like the Senate, but and Alan always talks about this, but we like our congressmen,
right?
And
right.
You know, we're going to
people
vote.
Don't like lawyers, but they like their lawyer,
right?
Yep, yeah.
Like I like you, right? You're right. So right. That's the thing. You like the person that you have. Okay. So bring that to it, because it's the local level. Bring it to my community and bring it to my town. And if I spend time as I do, I spend time in our food pantry and in our shelter. I see people who are in genuine need.
Right.
I see people who are at a poverty level and who can't do anything. Now, this is one of those things where you say, okay, I'm wondering, because I don't see this system, like, where is that money going? Because I don't see it coming to these individuals.
Right, exactly.
And I look at great people who are working in the community really, really hard, trying to come together as a group to help those individuals. And, by the way, as you mentioned, a great majority under the age of 18 of trying to focus on the children who are affected. And when we talk about the poverty, that cannot be taken out of the picture that, you know, well, they ought to be working and getting a job. Okay, they're seven.
Right.
You know, so I think when you look at it as again, anecdotal, but looking at it as well, what's happening in my town, and you see the people, can you see people who maybe are abusing the system? Sure.
Yeah,
yes, absolutely.
But we're not talking about that. I agree with you. But that's abuse of the system is not the problem. The system is the problem. The system. And again, through maybe all good intentions, is not attacking the causes, though, because I feel the same thing. You know, you see people on the street and you give somebody on the street a couple of dollars and you wonder, you know, we're spending $1.4 trillion a year on entitlements. How does that even get to this guy?
Yeah.
Like, who in the government knows that this guy is here and is going to help him, let alone... You know, I understand they can get him a night, off the streets, but let alone actually fix that issue.
Well, this is ultimately going to be my point, because if you ask anyone on the ground, if you ask any of the hardworking men and women who are perhaps working at the poverty level themselves, trying to address this problem, that if you talk to them, they're going to say, yeah, we need more money.
And they do. But the other thing they'll tell you, Joe, is they'll say what you started to say, which is, they'll say, Rich, you don't have a sense of the enormity of the problem.
Absolutely.
You and I talked about that word at one
right.
point. The enormity of meaning, forget the 7-year-old, because we're not going to make them work. But what do you do with the 19-year-old who wants to work but has the kid at home and doesn't drive and can't get to the place and maybe doesn't has daycare issues and things like that?
What is our responsibility as a society in that
regard? Our responsibility is to create a system that gives that person the opportunity to be able to work at some level, to be able to start getting their arms around the idea that they can work, they have a value to society. We can help them for as long as they need to. But I think that kind of the benevolent, the soft racism of low expectations. I think that's a problem, and I think that we could make it more apparent to these people that we're there to help them. And they can be productive and be part of it. I'm not talking going out and working 40 hours a week, but I'm talking something to change the mindset.
Does that not take a bureaucracy?
Oh, it definitely does. It definitely does. And you know, with bureaucracies, as we all know, comes, you know, abuse and things like that, and they don't do everything right. But that is, you know, look, and here I am, the conservative, saying this. This is one of those problems that you actually do need government to solve. It's a big enough problem, and it's a man-made enough problem that it's exactly the kind of thing that government should be solving. All I'm saying is right now, for the money we spent and the time and the angst that we give it, we're not solving it.
So let me ask you this question, which, by the way, if you asked me, I wouldn't have an answer for. But let me ask you anyway. What are we doing right?
What we are certainly doing right over, say, the last 40 years is, we know, regardless of what you might think of my political views on this, we've certainly we've lessened the stigma of poverty. I think that we've disassociated the thoughts from you're poor because it's your fault. Okay. And I know you're thinking, geez, Rich, you're a conservative. Don't you people all think this?
No. I did not. Don't put that into my.
No, but that's a significant evolutionary change. Right. And that's something that helps. And
awareness.
Awareness. And you know, however little we are starting to, you know, education and health and all those things that surround it. But I think that we probably need a rethinking to get to how do we actually make people who are poor in this generation not be poor in the next generation. And I think that's the gap that we haven't bridged yet.
Now, I would argue, because, and I would only argue, that it's not for lack of trying in many cases.
Oh, not at all. And it's not. And again, I'm not saying this. This isn't like, you know, people, you know, when people say, oh, the drug companies don't want to cure cancer because they make so much money. Yeah, I'm not saying it's something like that. I'm not saying, but I am saying that we've been doing something for many, many years, and there's a lot of hardworking people. But you know, anytime you're spending a lot of money, you're creating a huge amount of governmental turf. And governmental turf means governmental jobs. It means governmental policies. It means commissions. And it means studies. And it means people, you know, pontificating about it. And it you get away a little bit from what it was we were trying to do in the first place. You know, it's one thing to give somebody money. It's another thing to create the delivery system to get that person money, support, assistance. And then and pretty soon the delivery system starts becoming quite a weight in itself. And I think sometimes we spend more time trying to, we always talk about that, the more efficient delivery of government services, more efficient delivery of entitlements, and we get away from the idea of how do we actually give people, I know this sounds terribly political, give people the tools, the opportunity they need to actually not just make their poverty better, but actually move them out of that, you know, into, you know, the shrinking middle class.
Yeah. Well, and then how do we really, cause you're creating a middle class.
Yeah. Yeah.
In many ways.
Yeah. And you know, there are those who would argue this country worked best when there was, you know, a strong and, you know, vibrant middle class. I think a lot of people talk about now how the middle class is shrinking and getting squeezed, you know, as the poor get poorer and the rich get richer and the middle class, you know, are sliding more towards, you know, the poor end of the scale.
When you look at the overall, and this may be where we
where we part ways.
Well, we'll see how it goes here. Maybe not. But I mean, do you, like, to me? I know you have you've thrown it around a couple of times, and you make it a very partisan issue. But I don't know. To me, by anybody, this isn't being talked about enough. I think when you look at both Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal, whatever the case may be, when you talk about issues that affect us,
right?
I don't hear anybody talking about this.
Well, I think if we had a politician sitting here, what she or he would say is, no, that's not true. Excuse me, because we talk about jobs all the time.
Yes.
Right, creating jobs, you know, and so
I'm talking about the people who are in active poverty.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, you know, and a huge amount of the people who live in poverty, by the way, are working. There's a very small percentage of people who are in poverty who are not either
the working poor.
Yeah, and you take away you know, senior citizens or people who are disabled. When you take them out of the mix, there's very few people who just receive entitlements and are neither senior citizens, disabled, nor work or nor have any working people in their household. Most of these people are working, doing something, we talk about, and so getting them jobs that's not necessarily the problem.
Are you a trickle down guy?
I think it works, but I think like everything else in our economy, everything is so interrelated that nothing works in a vacuum. Yes, quantitative easing has worked in a vacuum and will for a while, but trickle down, I think trickle down is one part of it, right?
Quantitative easing. Okay.
Hey, look. There's a reason why the stock market is at 17,000. Okay, and it's not because of wage growth.
And we're all sharing that wealth. Corporate attorney Rich Honan pays us a visit once a month, and we couldn't be more delighted. Partner in charge of Phillips Lytle LLP. Partner in charge of the Albany office. And for more information, you can go to Phillips Lytle. Phillips Lytle, LYTLE, PhillipsLytle.com. Rich, always love having you here. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.